So this talk is inspired by a conversation I had with Bill and Ellen Berez about the nature of knowledge. And it is also inspired by the great Colbert Report and his essays or his pronunciations on truthiness, which he said was the new truth. Truthiness is just as important as truth. So I want to talk about a few particular mitzvot. As I mentioned, Parashat Mishpatim is a litany, and I don't mean to say that in a sort of a disparaging way, is a litany and catalog of mitzvot that expand upon the Ten Commandments and are themselves expanded upon in the Talmud, especially in Bava Kamma. So in chapter 23, verse 1, and in chapter 21, verse 16, we have two different commandments: that you should not bear a false rumor, don't lift up your hand in wickedness to be a false witness. And elsewhere we see v'gonav ish, don't kidnap or capture or rob a man, in a sense, or burgle a man, and sell him and find him behind, under your hand, take him under your hand into your possession, you shall surely die. There is a connection in various places in the Parsha and elsewhere between falsehood and lying, falsehood and theft. The falsehood is itself a kind of theft. This is elaborated in various midrashim, that they create a concept called genevat dat, which is robbing a person of his thoughts, which is, we might roughly translate as gaslighting. So Bill, Ellen, and I were talking about the problem of gaslighting these days, that we've entered a post-truth era. How do we know what's true, and how do we know whether to trust our own perceptions of things? When some third of America believes one thing, and some other third of America believes another thing, and somewhere in the middle, people are just confused. And our news media have started to polarize, and we don't share a common corpus of facts, even around science. I find that very scary, especially as someone with something of a scientific and analytic background. I find myself mistrusting my own perceptions and thoughts, and I think many of us do, on all sides of a political spectrum and in all manners of thought. And to an extent, that's good. That's in part the nature of the scientific method, to ever home in on the truth but never fully arrive there. But I do want to address this concept of genevat dat, which might be called, I think, gaslighting or manipulation is a fair concept. The early Midrash of Michilta says that there are seven types of thieves, and the very first it describes is one who steals the minds of people. Connecting to this week's parasha, the connection between false rumors, shamea shav, and gonev, kidnap or robbery. That falsehood is itself a kind of robbery, and the lack of authenticity and integrity in private and public discourse is a deception and a capturing of someone's mind for misuse, plain terms, manipulation. Michilta also says that that's true even if you give a true report in a manner that leads one to believe a falsehood. So, you know, I'm trying to think of a good example. Well, I was. This will be kind of pat, but or snarky. But Jews, there are a lot of Jews in the entertainment business, but it's never meant that we control the entertainment business or have space lasers, right? That all the great lies have a kernel of truth, else they're not believable. In fact, I remember reading an article that part of the problem with calling Joe Biden part of a crime family was it didn't stick because he's so boring, right? He's so bland, there's no way he's part of some secret conspiracy. So there has to be sort of an element of truth in every canard, in every great lie. And we're cautioned against misusing words. We often translate Lashon Hara as gossip, but it's really malicious speech. Rechilut is gossip per se. Lashon Hara is a broader category of misuse of words. And the Talmud noticed that there is this fraud. There's, just as you can defraud someone in commerce, you can defraud someone with just your simple words. So the first example they give, I don't know if you know this, window shopping is prohibited in Judaism, roughly speaking.
What?
Did someone just say what? Excellent. Window shopping, yeah, I don't know if my mother's on the line, but I know she won't like hearing that. Window shopping is prohibited because, says the Talmud, it will give someone the sense that you want to buy something and you're not intending to. So it's okay to go window shopping if you're sure, you know, there's a better than decent chance that you'll buy something, but you can't just wander around a store absentmindedly just to entertain yourself on a Sunday afternoon after the farmer's market. Likewise, with converts, you can't recall to them their former ways. It's insulting and hurtful. So again, what is the origin of truth? You know, if falsehood is so decried, I think, as I said, as I joked with Stephen Colbert's old character on the Comedy Central show, The Colbert Report, not with his presentation now, which is nowhere near as much fun. Truthiness, you know, we're in a truthy era. Truth is less important than truthiness, than the verisimilitude of truth. And it seems that the majority or a group, you know, we can be very ambivalent about the truth that a majority might know. There is, even in our tradition, and right in the middle of those aliyot that I read, this wariness and this ambivalence about the group, that you should not follow lo tihye acharei rabim lera'ot. You should not follow the multitudes to wickedness. But elsewhere, it also tells us that you judge according to the majority, presumably in a court, you know, a 27-7 verdict, say. They had large courts back then, where they believed themselves to have large courts. But that ambivalence is really, I think, a piece of what's going on now. You know, we saw hundreds, if not thousands, of people invade our Capitol building, sort of in a mob mentality. We've seen gross violence in cities like Portland, where I find demonstrations scary because you never know what direction a mob will suddenly break in. You never know how it's going to go. And so we have to keep our wits about us in sort of the mass movements of the populace and not fall prey to majoritarianism, which, quite frankly, the Constitution is decidedly a non-majoritarian document. It's not designed to reflect the will of the people. In many ways, it's designed to thwart the will of the people and to protect the minority and to protect the individual. And our various sages looked at this sort of ambivalence in this week's Parsha about the will of the majority and when to follow it and when not. And Bachia writing in the medieval period and Rashbam writing about the same time had these things to say. If you see a vast majority of people acting in a forbidden manner, do not make the fact that they constitute the norm an excuse to follow in their footsteps. You know, the very very salient fact for small children and teenagers and even adults. Well, everybody's doing it, why can't I? Right? That is not a maxim of Jewish ethics. That following the majority or your own willful heart, to quote Deuteronomy, is not how we understand ethics, but there has to be some higher principle. There has to be some deeper natural law that we strive for. And not only that, but our sages point out to us, you have to actually actively resist the will of the majority to do wickedness. That I wonder, in the cases of riots over the past year, or the violence at the Capitol, the insurrection and mutiny at the Capitol, if there were people who tried to stop it. I would have to imagine that of thousands of people, someone at least said, maybe quietly, maybe out of fear, not too loudly, hey guys, this isn't what we should be doing. That there were voices for calm and reason and challenging the will of the majority. And it's always hard, right? And as I said, truth itself becomes a victim. You know, when one television channel says A and the other television channel says the opposite of A about something, even in the case of the cause of a wildfire, how do we lose sight of what we in our gut know to be true, what we know the scientific method or academic study or careful analysis would lead us to. And we can be led to believe that a novel means the exact opposite of what we perceive it to. Even in the Talmud, there were rabbis who could convince each other that something was kosher when it absolutely was not. And that fear of confronting the majority and established versions of truth or ambiguity around truth is accentuated by our sages. The Siftei Chachamim, who were the commentators on Rashi himself, kind of put this quote in his mouth. They say, what difference will it make if I judge truthfully? They are the majority and I am but one person and they will not heed me. This is what Soloveitchik kind of hints at when he, in the title of his book, The Lonely Man of Faith. We're required to be truth tellers and required to strive for something deeper, even when confused, and to struggle and to grapple with all those questions, even against the majority who might lead us not just to wickedness, but to falsehood. Rashbam, who is Rashi's grandson, says, if in your opinion the majority are about to commit an error in judgment, don't remain silent just because they're the majority, but state your view. This applies even if you know beforehand that they won't accept your viewpoint. And he didn't address this directly, but I wonder how far our sages would go, and I've read some about it, but haven't thought about it in a while. If by stating your viewpoint, you might risk violence, that you might risk personal harm or certainly destruction of reputation, as we circle back to the idea of Genevat Dat. Genevat Dat also encompasses ideas about deceiving people about reputation, right? Deceiving people about factuality, gaslighting people about their own perceptions, and even the most common case would be if you were traveling in someone's neighborhood and bumped into them, you shouldn't let them walk away believing that you came to visit them, or should you? They might be so grateful to see you and say, oh, did you come all this way to see me? And there's some debate about whether you can let them be left with that misperception. So when faced with ambiguity around truth and faced with lack of clarity about the will of the majority and whether to follow it or not, and the ambivalence about how to determine an argument and how to set one's belief and one's faith, I looked for guideposts in the Parsha. There weren't a lot of sort of moral maxims because, as I said, the Parsha, the mitzvot of the Parsha are mostly about practice and what to do if, you know, you see a lost ox, from which we can do what Elliot Dorff calls depth theology, which is infer God's will and infer the belief underlying a practice. But there was one particular place, one particular commentary I did find. So chapter 22, verse 20, one of the things I read, don't carry false rumors and don't set your hands to wickedness to be a false witness, to be a witness to violence. And repeatedly in this parsha, we're enjoined not to participate in oppression of the widow, the stranger, the orphan, because we ourselves only verses ago, only chapters ago, were redeemed and saved from serfdom in Egypt. So the Chazon Ish, who I believe is in the 18th century, notes that all mitzvot, the ordinances, and all the particulars of halakha were given that we might learn life perspective, correct behavior, and good values. To simplify, as the Talmud says, that all mitzvot were given to refine us. And from the commandment about kidnapping others and the commandment about deceiving and oppressing, we learn to abhor any act that conquers another to diminish their freedom. We don't have a lot of core principles or trump laws, you know, that there's always a principle that trumps every other. One might speak to the principle of human dignity as a very powerful trump card within our ethical system, but there aren't very many. And one you could reach for, and I think this is what the Chazon Ish is doing, is that your judgments should never be to enhance your own power. That's a good sign that you're following the wrong truth if it's self-aggrandizing. I forget who it was who said it, but you should never believe biography unless it's embarrassing. Right? Like if you read a biography and there's nothing shameful in it, someone's not being very intellectually honest. So when we seek truth and when we seek to find the right group, I don't want to say tribe, but you know, people, like-minded people, people with whom to strive for justice and equity, I think we should be wary of our own motivations. And a good sign that something is probably not fully true is if it's very self-serving and self-aggrandizing. And I think that's what the Chazon Ish is getting at. And that's implicit in a lot of this week's parsha. The things that reinforce systems of oppression and things that reinforce the power hierarchy as they may be, although Leviticus is prone to this quite a bit and later portions of the Bible are things we should at least think about warily.